everybody. Welcome to the Friday Filibuster. I'm David Johnson, joined as always by Mac McIntyre.
Hackadoo.
And our special guest star, who you've heard before, Daryl Loomis.
Ahoy, hoy.
We were just griping about the weather up here in northern New England. Mac and I were surprised to find about 10 inches to a foot of giant, heavy snow hit us right before Halloween, so which is some kind of record, I think, Mac, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, so that was some of those power outages and whatnot. But meanwhile, in the good state of Texas, you guys are suffering through your onslaught of the season change.
Wind, 50 degrees, it's awful.
Wow, wind and 50 degrees.
It's windy, though. You should see it.
I'll take your word for it. I mean, I've seen wind before, so I don't know how it is. So the three of us are here. We'll kill some time for you before we get in the weekend. So let's get right rolling. Daryl, since we haven't heard from you in a while, any updates, anything you've been watching, TV, movies in general that you'd like to report on?
I've been watching the upstart of the new season of Parks and Rec, which...
Yes, we're fans of that around here.
Yeah, and it hasn't been 100% great, but there have been some real choice things. Swanson's doing well, so
that's right. The Swanson-centric stuff tends to typically be the Tammy, you know, the Tammy one episode was, I think, the best of the season. But I agree with you; it's been kind of hit and miss a little bit. But that was a fantastic one, especially the moonshine drink off or the match.
The moonshine drink off was fantastic, and and the one thing that I'm having a harder time with is, and I think you've talked about this before, Dave, is the Lindsay being the running for city council.
Right, Leslie's arc there, right.
And I think it just sort of takes it out of the framework that the series has built up and makes it seem bigger than I think it should be.
I think that's a good point. Like, I just think that the character Leslie is... The whole thing works better as an ensemble comedy. You know, in fact, last episode was very much that, so... That's my fear. It gets so centralized. But you make a good point, too. Like, it might be too ambitious for its own good.
We'll see. But, you know, it's what we've – tomorrow's the – or Thursday's the fifth episode.
Yeah.
And so we'll see how it goes. I did like a Treat Yourself Day.
That was good.
That was fun. So I've been watching that. I'm through. I talked the first time I was on about – trying Deadwood again, and I'm one episode shy of killing the first season.
And again, Eric's been kind of watching. I never did watch Deadwood, but what's your take on it?
Well, the first, I guess it's a seven episode first season. I think that's right, seven or eight episodes. But the first three or four, I was ambivalent, leaning towards the negative about. The stories just weren't grabbing me. And then a super young Kristen Bell shows up.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And in a little subplot that wound up actually really grabbing me pretty good. So by the end of the season, she's dead now. Not to spoil anything for anybody.
Is this pre or post Veronica Mars?
Veronica Mars, I think. She looks like she's about 14 or something in it.
Gotcha.
That grabbed me and pretty much ran me through to the end of the season. So I feel actually better about it than I did to start with. It feels like they're getting their legs underneath them a little bit. So, I'll keep moving on with it.
All right. Nice. Yeah, that's, again, one of those, you know, flashpoints of television that I never got into, like The Sopranos. Never seen a single episode of The Sopranos. And
nor did I. Nor did
everyone
I.
tells me it's the greatest pop culture creation in the history of history. So
yeah, that'll be for another few months sometime down the road.
Yeah. So, all right, cool. Anything else?
No, that's about it.
All right, very good. Mac, how about you?
Yeah, from the world of comics.
Yes.
The big Marvel's big Spider Island event came to its conclusion this week. So it's been quite a long and crazy 2 months following Spider Island, and I gotta say they actually had a really satisfying ending for this one. My big complaint about Marvel over the last couple of years is that these big events that they do, they don't end. They just, the final, you know, the last part of it is just ends with a to be continued in the next event. So it's like, you know, I've been following this big epic story for all these months, and it's just a commercial for the next big epic story.
So you feel like you have some closure?
I do, yeah. They actually, you know, it's a really solid story with a real strong beginning, middle, end, and a really, you know, they wrap up all the loose ends in the last two chapters, and a lot of really, you know, there's a ton of characters involved. Basically, all the Marvel characters who are based in New York have a part to play in it, and but even with all the characters involved, each character like gets a moment to shine, and there's a whole bunch of subplots, and they all get wrapped up in the end, and it's just it's really just real satisfying ending. That's the word for it, satisfying. So, good job to them. They really impressed me with this one. It's like old school Marvel comics.
Nice. Now, have you flirted with the idea of checking out Batman Arkham City? Because I have to say, I'm still sinking time into that.
How are you?
It is. If you are a comic, you will gain much out of this.
Yeah, for a while there, I was replaying Arkham Asylum. I think I should really, you know, finish that one first.
All right. By the time you finish that, you'll be able to pick Arkham City up for cheap.
Right. And we are only 2 weeks or so away from the new Assassin's Creed Brotherhood.
Well, you're a fan, right?
That's right.
I'm a big fan, yeah. And you know, as excited as you guys are for Arkham City, I'm excited for the new Assassin's Creed. It's going to be awesome.
Daryl, you get in any of this action or what?
I have not played either of either Arkham City or Arkham Asylum, but I haven't heard anything but great about Arkham Asylum. I am excited about the new Elder Scrolls game coming out in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I was actually was going to go pre-order that at Blockbuster because I still have like a lot of leftover credit there. They don't take pre-orders because they generally stink with that kind of stuff, but if we get something to buy, so I probably will swoop in because that is a time sink right there.
It's going to be a huge time sink, and I've played the last three of those, or the last two, and then this one, and then the two Fallout games, and I have yet to finish a one of them.
Nice.
And I've probably put, I don't know how many hundreds of hours combined into these games, but I've never actually finished one, so.
Yeah, sounds like me with Arkham Asylum.
Yeah, that's fine with me.
Yeah, like, I'm not even a big RPG guy, but I dumped in like probably 60 odd hours into Elder Scrolls 4. So, yeah, that was a lot of fun. I actually finished it. An excellent turn by Sean Bean, by the way, in that game.
There was an excellent turn by Sean Bean, that's right.
So, I couldn't go any further in that game because I went on a little killing spree and I ended up killing like key people in missions.
That's one of the great things about those games.
They make you pay for those indiscretions. I even tried like a reanimation spell. Yeah. And I just, so instead of like bringing her back to life to tell me what to do for the mission, it just turned this poor woman into a senseless, you know, drooling ghoul. So.
Yep. It's, you know, but it lets you do those things.
It does.
And that's pretty fun.
Yes. Absolutely. So yeah, that's next up. So it's been a pretty wallet abusing time for games for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, on my end, I just want to highlight a series that we just started watching. Thanks again to our free Showtime, 3 months of Showtime, which coincidentally we ended up getting just as Dexter season 6 began. So we're sly like that up here, Gosson. But right after that, paired with Dexter is the show Homeland. Have you guys heard of this?
No.
Yeah, I've seen like some ads for it. I don't know too much about it.
Yeah, it's Claire Danes is in it, and a lot of recognizable people. And it's made by some of the guys behind 24. And the central conceit is that Claire Danes is a CIA operative. She gets some information that an American POW has been turned. You know, Al-Qaeda has turned an American POW. And then a few months later, they discover an American POW who's been locked up for 8 years. And so she's... So then it becomes like a two-pronged. So you're seeing his reintegration with his life and his family and obviously all the things that have changed. And meanwhile, she's on the other end tracking him and, you know, trying to see if indeed he has been turned. So it's a great show right now. We're two episodes in. The premise is interesting, but it'll be tough to pull off because it's like at some point, I mean, they give you these hints about what the guy is. You know, he has flashbacks and he'll do a few things here and there, so you're not sure. So it's going to be tough to see how they keep continuing that suspense, because he either is or he isn't, and then what, you know? So,
right.
And if the old white man cabal is behind it, then I'm definitely done. I can't take that. But for now, it seems pretty realistic, and it's pretty good. And Claire Danes is excellent in this movie, in this show. Excellent.
Maybe he has an evil twin, and there's really two of them running around.
That's possible. So it's like a little prestige action, maybe. I don't know. All right. So let's talk about what we're working on for the site, I guess. Daryl, you got anything you'd like to put special attention to?
It's been a depressing 2 or 3 weeks for me in the review world. I started off, about, I think it was 3 weeks ago, with Last Exit to Brooklyn, which is an old Hubert Selby movie adaptation.
Okay.
He made he wrote the book for Last Exit to Brooklyn and then Requiem for a Dream.
Oh, nice. Which are all pick-me-ups right there.
So that's all really heartwarming and nice. And then last week, I reviewed the infamous movie called A Serbian Film.
Oh, yeah.
Which was an...
I can't even go there.
It was an experience, and it's also a really dang good movie.
Really?
It's the best movie that I can't recommend to anybody.
Gotcha, ever. Yes.
But I can't argue with how well made it is.
Is it as unsettling, though, as its reputation?
It is as unsettling as its reputation calls for, but it is not nearly as graphic.
Okay.
And
sometimes those are worse, though. You know?
Yeah, a lot of time I think that's what's so memorable about this movie is, like, when people remember a big bloodbath in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, when there's no blood basically at all.
Yeah.
You know, the movie puts all these images in your mind that you don't want in there, and then you're left with them, and you can't unsee things. So,
wow, good for you.
Yeah, it's great. And then this week, I am reviewing a little known movie called In a Glass Cage. It's a Spanish film that I saw initially back when Cinemax showed Friday Night Art Movie followed by Friday Night Skinemax.
Yes.
Right? So I'm 12 or 13.
Blurring the line there.
Yeah. And so as a result I saw of that, I saw a ton of art movies that had come out at the time. Kiss of the Spider-Woman, Donna Floor and Her Two Husbands, good foreign movies that I really like to this day, and also In a Glass Cage, which is about a ex-Nazi pedophile who gets... did you ever see 6 Degrees of Separation?
Will Smith?
The Will Smith movie, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Okay. Basically, he comes into this house. He's an unknown quantity, and he comes into this house of aristocrats and changes their world. So that's the plot of In a Glass Cage, basically, but with a young guy who's really into this old Nazi's experiments.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah, so that's a nice blast from the past of something that I never really wanted to see again.
Yeah. Yeah,
so between those three things, it's been a laugh a minute.
We need to get you some Yo Gabba Gabba.
No kidding. I was disappointed in a certain respect to find that somebody else was assigned the third season of Dennis the Menace.
Oh, yeah.
Which had given me some laughs in the past. So
sounds like you need them. Sounds like you need them.
Yeah. So it's been a lot of that. Not a lot of fun stuff. Couple of decent horror movies, but yeah, mostly what's on my mind are these horrible things.
All right, well, please send prayers out to Daryl if you're listening. So.
Yeah, please.
All right, Mac, tell me your slate is not nearly as soul-crushing.
Yeah, mine's more, what I'm reviewing is more on the cheesy side of things.
All right.
I wish.
Yeah, you remember the whole Y2K thing and all the hoopla over that?
Yeah.
We'll combine that with vampires and
nice.
You get Dracula 2000.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I liked Dracula 2000.
I remember this movie.
Yeah, with Gerard Butler from 300.
Gerard Butler, that's right.
Dracula. Yeah.
And little-known pop star Vitamin C.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
There's a lot of famous people in that. Omar Epps from House.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Ryan, you're a 7 of 9 from that's Star
right.
Trek.
That's right,
and,
yeah.
And Nathan Fillion is even in a
yeah, I pulled
small
it up.
Role.
Johnny Lee Miller from Dexter. And
oh, yeah.
And whatnot.
So is that on Blu-ray?
No, it's on an Echo Bridge DVD.
Yeah, re-release okay. type thing.
Okay.
Yeah, it's that and its two sequels. If you
ooh, I never saw the two sequels.
But you have to review the two sequels as well?
Yes, they're all on a double-sided disc.
So, so this is Wes Craven, right?
Produced by Wes Craven. They're directed by Patrick Lussier. Lussier.
I gotcha.
Mm-hmm. He recently directed Drive Angry with Nicolas Cage.
Yes. I actually reviewed that one for the site. So.
Yeah, so that guy. And but yeah, Dracula 2000, what can you do? It's the year 2000 and Dracula's back and he walks around without a shirt. And
mm-hmm. Now, Gerard Butler is looking some... He's got some sweet Eurotrash looking going on.
He does, yeah. He's got the long flowing hair, and he's walking around shirtless all the time. Yeah. And yeah, so but he doesn't come back for the sequels. The second movie, Dracula, is hardly in it at all. He spends most of his time as Dracula's remains, and only comes back to life at the very end.
Okay.
Nice.
And then the third movie takes place in Romania, because like it's cheaper to film there.
Oh yeah.
Like I think that the filmmakers must have looked at where they could film and then built the script
sure.
around that.
That's yeah. right.
Like so many sci-fi channel filmmakers. And but in that one, we get Rutger Hauer as Dracula. Again, only in the last 5 minutes of the movie.
The fourth movie takes place in the producer's basement.
Really? Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I will say this about the third movie. It did give me something that I'd never seen before in a movie.
Oh, yeah.
That's a vampire on stilts.
Nice.
That's oddly disappointing right there.
For a good reason? Was he on the stilts for a good reason?
For no reason whatsoever.
Even better.
All the vampires are attacking, and our hero is a kung fu fighting priest who's sanctioned by the Vatican to fight vampires.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
And he's busting out all his kung fu moves on the vampires, and then he runs around a corner, and there we have a vampire walking down the street on stilts. And he's just... doing his stilt walking thing. And should I spoil it? Yeah, I'll spoil it. Sure. Nobody's going to watch this. And our hero breaks one of the stilts. Vampire loses his balance and falls and stakes himself on his own broken stilt.
Oh wow.
Very poetic.
That's too bad for him.
Yeah. But again, I think the filmmakers must have said, hey, I know a guy who can walk on stilts. Let's put him in the movie. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I think that I'm guessing that's how that came about.
Well, I think your speculation is warranted. So. Well, congratulations on that. That's a get. That's let's see here. Well, I don't know. I've been. I used to be in Daryl's position, reviewing all kinds of terribly disturbing crap. But you know, in my advanced years, I think I've settled down. I'm reviewing a lot of BBC dramas. So. The Street is a BBC drama. Like, so I got 3 seasons of The Street, and it's essentially an anthology series looking at kind of the trials and tribulations of these blue-collar types, you know, types of people who work on, who live in the street here. So it really
I think
is
I remember
just,
that. Is that an older show?
No, it's only a couple years old.
Oh, okay. There used to be a show like that from England that ran on PBS, but I might be thinking of something.
Yeah, it might
different.
Be. I mean, PBS... You know, it picks up all the BBC's sloppy seconds.
Right.
Yeah, but like Jim Broadbent is in it, and Bob Hoskins, and a couple other recognizable folks.
That might
so,
be good.
Yeah, I mean it's straight up drama. You know, it's drama. It's dramatic. So if you, I mean, we're talking about infidelity and drug abuse, and some poor guy comes back from the war disfigured, so he's dealing with that, and suicidal elderly people, and the very first episode opens with a guy. Running over a little girl in the street, and then all the fallout, emotional and otherwise, of that. So, if you want your drama served up in a heaping plate of heaping drama, that's yours. And then
every
on the other side,
very special.
And on the less serious side, reviewed The Change Up, starring Jason Bateman and Ryan Reynolds.
Was that anything? Was that worth anything?
It's worth something. It's worth something. I mean, it has the criminally overexposed Olivia Wilde in it.
Yeah.
And, And by overexposed, I mean, this did have something I've never seen before in a movie, and I believe this is where we're trending. CGI nipples.
What?
They put CGI nipples on Olivia Wilde first.
Wow.
Yeah, that's where we've come.
Is she missing them?
She was, I guess, no, she, in her comment, I guess in the commentary in an interview or something, she was like wearing the pasties or whatever, and they CGI'd them on there.
I think the world's least expensive special effect is now $1 million.
Yeah, I think Leslie Mann is in this. I think they do the same thing with her. So, I mean, it's essentially a hard R. Yeah, it's very, you know, there's a lot of gross out humor. Jason Bateman gets a mouthful of baby diarrhea, and so there's a lot of gross out stuff, a lot of naughty language. So it's definitely a hard R, Wedding Crashers, Hangover type of stuff. It's a very familiar formula, you know, two guys switch bodies, so it's your Freaky Friday, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there are some laughs to be had. We watched it, we laughed here and there, so it's not an abject failure. I mean, it's sometimes it tries too hard to be shocking, you know, and that's to its detriment, mm-hmm. but I like both of the actors in it, and they're both pretty funny, and it seems like they're willing to do anything. So, predictable, formulaic, but, you know, funny in some moments, so... I give it a partial recommendation, but I'm actually working on that review as we speak. So that is all I've got. So where are we going next, Mac?
Next, we're going to take a look at what's coming out on DVD and Blu-ray. You listening and follow along at home. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com. We're going to click on the upcoming DVD releases tab. And from there, we're going to scroll down to the cover art gallery for November 8th. I'm just going to take a look at what's on the list and what jumps out at us as interesting or exciting or amusing or horrifying.
And I think all of that can be summed up in Weird Al Yankovic, Alpocalypse yes. HD. Look at that.
Yeah.
Man, he came to Concord, New Hampshire. I'm still kicking myself for probably not going to see him.
Ah, dang. I wonder what's on that, though. Is it videos or a concert? Or?
I don't know. It looks like videos.
Okay.
But maybe it's a live show. It must be a live show.
Oh, yeah, but either way, yeah, good old Weird Al.
Let's see here. What is the change up we're just talking about?
Mm-hmm.
There's In a Glass Cage. Oh, and Frankenhooker on Blu-ray.
What's yes, that? Of course.
Frankenhooker on Blu-ray. Huh. A classic cult movie. Frank Henenlotter is a fun director. I reviewed his first new movie in, I don't know, 10 or 12 years in Bad Biology, which is disgusting and hilarious.
I didn't even know about that. He had a new movie.
Yeah, and he actually apparently got a multi-film deal with the rap producer who did Bad Biology, so there's going to be more from his crazy brains coming up.
Yeah, Frankenhooker, back in the day when that movie first came out on VHS, it was in a special box that had a little button on it. You press the button, and there was a woman's voice saying, "You want a date?"
That's right. And, of course, it's the Frankenhooker that wants the date, so the answer is clearly no.
Look at this, Law & Order, the complete series. 104 discs.
Oh, my
wow.
God. Isn't the show still going on? $450
down for $700. I bought cars. Obviously, yes.
Jeez.
That is unbelievable. That's way too much Law & Order for some time.
Yeah, Doctor Who, this is season 6, part 2. Part 1 having come out earlier this year. I actually looked it up, though, and there is a complete series set coming out like between now and Christmas, though. Or not the complete series, complete season. So if you've been waiting for that complete season box, it's on its way. Or if you bought the first part 1, now here's part 2 for you.
Ooh, Mortal Kombat Legacy. I think this was that web series, right?
Oh, I was wondering what that was.
Yeah. Nice. 100 minutes worth.
That's two of the characters are holding guns on the cover. There's a lot of, I thought Mortal Kombat was like martial arts fighting.
This one was kind of a reimagining.
Oh.
Which I don't know if that was necessary, but hey. Anything else? Not a flushed out
Yeah, let's see. We got Blue Velvet for all the David Lynch fans. That's hitting Blu-ray. Another uplifting one there for you, Daryl.
Yeah.
Well, at least I can have some fun with that one. There's a Cannonball Run on Blu-ray for all you Burt Reynolds fans out there.
I'm a Dom DeLuise fan, actually. So.
Who's not? Who's not?
Hey, is this the one with Charles Nelson Reilly, or was he in the...
I hope so.
Charles Nelson Reilly makes every movie better.
He does.
He does. Yep. Did either of you ever see his one man show called Life of Riley?
I don't think I can handle that kind of audio.
It's on Netflix streaming.
Okay,
and it's really it's worth watching.
All right.
He's a crazy guy.
Well, I have to say, speaking of, talking about DVD releases, I need more Match Game.
Oh my goodness!
I love.
The Match Game is the best game show ever put.
It really is. I know. That's not hyperbole. I can watch Match Game forever.
It's hilarious. Well, you got Charles Nelson Reilly.
That's right. Brett.
And you got Richard Dawson.
Yeah, Dawson.
And
Gene Rayburn. It's just such this cultural relic. But it's Betty White's in it.
Oh yeah, Betty White's always in it. She's hilarious.
it's
terribly dirty questions.
It's got all these...
the double entendres.
That's right, all the double entendres. It's got I love how... you've got all these Z-grade celebrities, right? Mm-hmm. And they just think they are so awesome. that's why the show is great. They think it's just so awesome. So they're above the rules of Match Game. You know, it's just kind of anarchy back there. Jeez, all over it.
Well, apparently they were drunk for a lot of the filming, so...
It must be. They lured over the poor contestants. And poor people are trying to, win $500. Yeah, that's how much $500. They have to match for these imbeciles. And just because they think they're great, they screw around and they don't even get anything. Oh.
Yeah, it's good. And it's where Kirstie Alley got her start.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right.
She was a contestant on the show.
That's right.
And did really well and was hot. So here you go, movie career.
Yeah,
of a sort.
You know, as soon as you said that, I think I reviewed an anthology of it, and she was in that, and she had shoulder pads. She looked like a fiddle linebacker.
Oh, yeah. No, this is what, 1982 or 83? I mean, she was an absolute fashion plate.
That's right. So did was it Star Trek that she got her action?
Yeah. Star Trek 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh, man. All right. Well, enough of this Kirstie Alley talk. I don't think she's ever taken such a prominent role in this show. All right. Inadvertently sleazy sounding DVD release of the week. I do see one that seems to me to be the right answer, but we'll see what you guys think. Daryl, what do you think?
I had one here. Let me find it real fast. I am going with... Putty Hill.
Okay. Not bad. Not the one I was thinking. In fact, I think there's two here that sound. Mac, what about you?
Okay, good. I'll just go with it. Deep Purple.
Wow, good, but not... No, I'm
not the one you had in mind.
Not the two. The two I'm thinking of either are Little Big Man.
Oh, well, yeah, okay.
Fist of the North Star.
There you go.
Yeah, there is that. There was another one, too, that I
think In My Sleep can work, too, you know?
Yeah, I don't know what this means, but there's one on here called Squid Girls.
That's not bad.
Uh-huh.
How about One-Eyed Jacks? That might work, too. So, yeah, this doesn't have a ton of great movies this week, but a ton of inevitably sleazy sounding. Okay, so let's go to our ambush topic segment, the very last part of our podcast. We just throw out random topics at each other and just see what kind of joy we can siphon out. So I'll go first, gentlemen. Terrible examples of dubbing.
Oh, God, it's the whole world of Italian cinema.
Yeah, so much to choose from.
I am actually going to go with a movie that I reviewed three or four weeks ago, an Italian quote comedy called To Be 20, where a couple of mid-70s sexy girls decide to join a commune and hijinks of a sort happen.
Okay, nice.
They talk for, say, a minute at a time, and you wind up with a dub saying, let's go back to the house. And you're just left with nothing.
Do they even try to match it up? How do you do that?
Oh, no, they don't try at all to match it up. there's, you know, it's, and it's even, you know, Raro DVD is a good label for little obscure cult things, and that was the best they could find.
Ouch.
It's really, really pretty pathetic.
Yeah, that, I think you're right on about that. I've seen a couple of Italian movies in my time. Beast in Space was a pretty awful one.
Mm-hmm. The Beast in Space is special.
That's talking about stuff you can't unsee.
Yeah, exactly.
barn rape with a half man, half donkey.
Well, and it's the weirdest sequel I've ever seen, too.
That's right. It is a sequel, right?
It's a sequel to The Beast. one of the weirdest... weirdest.
Yeah.
That half man, half beast thing is
bizarre.
He gets a prominent role in the original.
So. I remember I tried to put very little. I tried to squeeze as much out of my mind from that movie. But one thing I will never forget is that, like, and again, this is it's not really a comedy. At least I don't think it is, unless it got lost in translation. It's supposed to be kind of, you know, it's a B movie. It's an exploitation movie. They play it fairly straight. In very straight face. I remember there's a scene where. These space troopers say how much they enjoy Uranus milk.
Oh, God.
That's like the delicacy of the time, Uranus milk.
God.
Yeah, yeah, very weird, very terrible. And, like, the opposite of titillating as well, by the way.
Yeah.
The exact, like, overweight, middle-aged, pasty Italian folks getting it on in the woods. It's the opposite of titillating, for sure. All right, Mac, can you follow up on
Beast in Space? Well, yeah, I don't think I can top The Beast in Space. Kind of like Leprechaun in Space, I guess.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. There's this other horror movie from, I think, Denmark called The Substitute.
Okay.
By itself, it's a very strange movie, but the gist of it is that kids get a substitute teacher. Substitute teacher is a monster who tries to kill them. And but in the dubbing... they have adult actors trying to do the kids' voices, and it's just, like, so obvious, you know? They're just,
nice.
It's these adults, and they're trying to talk in these, like, squeaky, high-pitched voices, and it's just awful.
Ouch. Well, the one I have is it's a limited example of dubbing, but this is a movie I think we all probably would like, but Galaxy Quest, remember that movie?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Great, fun film. But there's a, do you remember the scene? It's so obvious that they had an aim for a rating, so they changed it. But it was Sigourney Weaver, Tim Allen had to make their way through that hallway full of the fire and the clamps and all that stuff. Do you remember that?
Oh, sure.
And I don't know if you remember the scene, but she, like, Sigourney Weaver finds out they have to go through that, and she very clearly mouths, F that. You know, very clearly. But they dubbed, like, screw that.
Nice.
So yeah, it was probably on YouTube, so you should check it out. But it was just like, you can't get away with that because that boosts our rating. Or we want this to be a family-friendly film, so we can't have the F-bomb at all. But it's clear as day.
That really reminds me of the television cut of Glengarry Glen Ross.
Which is known for its profanity, right?
Which is just, I mean, it's 40% profanity, and so you have Al Pacino sitting back there screaming, flip you and flip your sister.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just constant.
Well, obviously the TV dubs are just a treasure trove, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, to me, Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon is bad. Die Hard 2. Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon. TV dubs. Now there is an idea for a website, and the entrepreneurs out there just collect all some of these classic TV dub movies that are profanity laced. You know, like one of my I gotta say this again. One of my favorites was in The Great Outdoors, the TV version of The Great Outdoors. There was a scene where this girl was talking to the guy, and she was in the real movie. She apologized for being a bitch, but in the TV dub, everybody familiar with this term. And I know this because I remember this because my brother and I laughed about it forever, but she said,
I'm sorry I acted like such a frappy.
Have you ever heard that term? Anyone?
A frappy?
I know what a frap is. It's a delicious, thick ice cream shake that we enjoy in New England here. But frappy? I don't know. I have no idea.
I guess it matched, kind of.
I guess it does. I just Google search frappy, and I just... brings me back to draft, so. Oh man. So yeah, if any listeners have an idea. Although, okay. Apparently the Urban Dictionary does have a listing for frappy.
Oh, there we go.
Their definition is anal pleasure.
Okay.
And their example context is Sean enjoys lots of frappy. And the cute male waiter.
Wow.
And again, that sentence works whether you use frappy or frap, by the way. Oh, man. So there you go. But I'm sure that's not what the dubbers, the great outdoors, would think.
Oh, of course not.
But what they meant, who knows?
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Let's move on from this cursed topic. Daryl, what's yours?
All right. We are... we just came out of the World Series where my Texas Rangers lost.
That must have been big. Crushing.
It was a good series. It was
Cruz like the goat around there now?
No, kind of. Yeah. But not for very long. The guy can play.
Yeah.
So
that's a bummer. I was hoping they'd pull it out. I was with Texas there.
Yeah, but they didn't. But so we heard that. And the middle of the football season and basketball season, which I'm sure you're probably not thrilled about, Dave, is the turmoil.
Oh, yeah.
That it's going.
The first time in a decade plus that my team has been relevant. You know, mm-hmm. Locked out, so.
Right. And so, yeah, with my Denver Broncos. Yeah. Going south, and with the Rangers losing the World Series, and with basketball apparently not happening.
What's your basketball team? Are you Dallas?
I haven't really spent a lot of time in like last 10 or 15 years. I haven't really watched a lot of basketball. I suppose Dallas. When I was a kid, I was a Knicks fan.
Oh, nice. All right.
I was a Patrick Ewing fan.
That's right. Welcome to the cursed club.
So yeah, I can I can stick with that because I mean I always did like Patrick Ewing. So there's that going on. So but Dallas, it's fun to fun to watch. You know, Dallas do well, but
Miami do poorly.
Yeah, well, no doubt. So, with all of that going on, what's your least favorite sports movie?
Ooh, least favorite. And all I'm gonna say right now, ground rules: all Air Bud movies are excluded.
Yeah, Air Bud is excluded. That's a dog movie.
Yeah, any movies with animals participating in human sports.
Movies about sports, at least to a greater or lesser degree.
Okay, you know what movie really irritated me? Was He Got Game. Remember that one, Spike Lee one?
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was terrible. It was just really contrived. And I mean, I love Denzel and, hey, I like Ray Allen as a basketball player, but I just remember the ending being so dumb. Like he threw the ball and it traveled.
Of course it did.
You remember it traveled in slow motion from the college campus to his dad. I don't know. It was just so over. I mean, I have a wide berth for basketball movies. I even like crap like Above the Rim. You remember? I think was it Omar Epps in that? He might have been. I'm not sure. But that was when Tupac was in Above the Rim. I have a lot of slack for basketball movies, but that one was just it was lauded and everyone loved. And it was so simultaneously overdone and half baked. So that's, and as far as overrated, real quick, I'll say I tend to think, this might be heretical, but I think Rudy is overrated as a sports movie.
Rudy is actually my vote.
Really?
Oh, nice.
There's a huge cult of Rudy fans out there.
I know there are, and I'm afraid to even say it.
It's worse than that, Mac. It's worse than that. I had a friend of mine whose husband was so enamored with Rudy, whenever he heard the music from Rudy, he would tear up. I don't know. It's just an extended, and you'll get into this, Daryl, but it's an extended video brochure for Notre Dame.
It absolutely is. You know, when you talk about, like, the soul-crushing movies that I've been reviewing,
yes,
you couldn't give me one more soul-crushing than Rudy.
I mean, the guy, he accomplishes nothing.
Accomplishes nothing. Even the true story is just this 5'4" loser who they give one special teams play to, and you make a movie out of that?
Yeah, in garbage time, no less.
You know, in garbage time. You know, I could get on the field and do more than Rudy. And I'm not bragging.
Yeah, it's just, and you know, like Sean Astin, I loved him in The Goonies, loved him in Lord of the Rings, and he's just so annoying in Rudy, I thought.
Completely annoying.
John Favreau, annoying in Rudy. It's not even a great family movie, because I remember watching it with like my grandparents, and John Favreau just swears constantly. You know?
Right.
And so it's like,
because it's realistic somehow.
So can't really watch it with a family, and... it's like everyone, like people are needlessly dicks, you know, his dad's a dick for some reason, but I really just can't get over how everybody's just, you know, sporting painful erections over the prospect of Notre Dame. You know?
Yeah, and that Rudy gets to play on a Notre Dame field for one play at one point validates his entire life.
That's right, and that's all, that's right. So
hate it.
Absolutely. If he does that, then it's off the big ditches, I guess. Right?
Oh my God.
Yeah, very you know, can't hold a candle to it, which was a movie that was released in the same time frame, I think. But to me it's far superior, which is Hoosiers. I think Hoosiers is excellent.
Yeah, that's a good movie. Yeah.
Hoosiers is a better movie. I'm a big fan of North Dallas 40.
Never saw it.
And that's about good old time Dallas Cowboys football.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
You know, but is a fun movie. Nick Nolte's good in it. I think Christofferson's in it.
Ooh.
You know, not that he's much of an actor, but, you know.
Huh. Well, Mac, before we cover yours, did you have one?
Yeah, you best or worst?
Worst. Yeah, worst. The best after, too.
Okay. Worst, I guess I'm kind of breaking the animal rule on this one, but movie that should have been great and should have been one of the best movies ever, but instead just wasn't, was Space Jam.
Hey, Patrick Ewing's in it, so we'll give a shout out to that. I think that and actually The Exorcist 3 were his two movie roles. Yeah, Space. But yeah, you want to talk about an extended feature length commercial, right?
Exactly. Yeah, the whole middle part of the movie is all about Bugs and Davy have to go and get Michael Jordan's special Nikes because he can't play without them.
It's gotta be shoes, Mike.
I know. You know, it's the cartoon characters and the human characters are almost never interacting, which struck me as kind of laziness. And the wacky slapstick never really got all that wacky, which was a real disappointment. Because I mean, these are the Warner Brothers characters, you know?
Right.
They do slapstick better than anybody, but
yeah.
There should have been all kinds of craziness going on, and there wasn't.
Anytime they tried to reboot the Looney Tunes characters from after the old days, it was always completely milquetoast.
Right.
Garbage. Do you remember the Looney Tunes Halloween episodes where they'd cut together old clips and then string this new plot over it? It's just terrible.
They did the Fantasy Island spoof that way that you run on cable forever. Yeah.
When did Space Jam come out?
Oh man,
96.
So
yeah,
Jordan was pretty recently retired, or had he?
He was going through his baseball phase.
That was baseball.
They worked that into the movie. Yeah.
Okay.
Because at the beginning of the movie, he strikes out at baseball and he feels sad, and then
he
plays Space Jam, and after Space Jam, he gets back on the field and he hits the ball out of the park.
Nice.
And so the whole movie was about him.
Right. I remember that.
Yeah.
It was to boost his confidence, right?
confidence.
As though Michael Jordan is a man who needs boosting.
Right. Right. Ah, terrible.
Well, what's your favorite, Matt?
Favorite? Let's see. I don't know. These days, I guess I'm kind of leaning towards one. Haven't seen in a while, but I remember it being totally awesome. Was Miracle.
Miracle's a good movie.
Yeah.
Miracle's very... I enjoyed that a great deal, actually. Good call on that. And another hockey movie, which isn't really, I just love Slapshot because it is the antithesis. It would never get made today, that movie. Never, you know?
It's so politically incorrect. It's so politically incorrect, but that movie had some balls.
Yeah. You got to give a shout out, of course, to the Bad News Bears.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's the one sports movie everybody can relate to.
Right, Bad News, absolutely. All right, Mac, why don't you wrap it up? What do we got?
All right, I'm using this word way too many times in this podcast, but I'm going to use it again. Wacky.
Yes.
Okay, so wacky lawyers.
Wacky lawyers. Oh, man. All right, well, I got to go with Jim Carrey and Liar Liar.
Oh.
I mean, talk about overwhacking it, that guy. That guy overwhacking it, for sure. And that was at the height of his powers.
It was.
I mean, he was, like, opening movies at, like, 50 mil. And now he's, like, saying weirdly inappropriate things about young girls.
I am going with Maggie Leiser, Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Oh, yes, good call.
Arrested Development character.
Oh, yes.
Actually, that's great. And that's a good, because there's so many wacky lawyers to choose from.
Bob Loblaw. going from blind lawyer to pregnant lawyer,
yes.
All for sympathy. And this is, the girl of my dreams.
I love that, you know, her lawsuit is against, that's why Arrested Development's so great, because there's jokes everywhere, but, you know, the restaurant Skip Church's breakfast.
Skip Church's.
Bob blah blah blah. Yeah.
Bob Loblaw's Loblog.
Bob Loblaw's Loblog. You might find our mouthful. I mean, of course, what's his face?
Barry Zuckerkorn?
Barry Zuckerkorn.
Who played Barry Zuckerkorn? Henry Winkler. Yeah.
So many Happy Days jokes.
Yeah.
Like just him looking in the mirror is, when he does a little thing, the little, fantastic. I think, you don't want to get too close to me. I think something laid eggs on me. All right, what's your wacky lawyer, Mac?
All right, I guess I'll go with the Hyper Chicken from Futurama.
Oh.
Yes, he just basically a giant chicken dressed in a Colonel Sam outfit with a thick Southern accent. And
makes him powerful.
Yes, aside from the fact that he's a chicken, he could just be like any other lawyer, but no, they made him a chicken because it's the future, I guess.
Of course.
Right. Mm-hmm. And let's see, on the Futurama website here, it says he grew up on a backwoods asteroid, and he went into law to support his 12 chicks.
Nice.
he's had early problems in his career, including charges of incompetence, but he became important enough to argue before the Supreme Court. So he was thought to have died when he misread Bender's graffiti and crashed his hover car, but then later, after the mutant revolution, he was seen at Bender's party. So Hyper Chicken is alive and well in the Futurama universe.
Thank goodness.
Too bad I don't know anything about Futurama. I probably don't want to.
Oh, you got it. Got some Futurama going. Get in touch with your inner Bender.
That's right. all right, well, that is it for this edition of Friday Film. So very fun romp. So thanks, Daryl, for joining us. Always good to have you. We'll be getting soon. Try to filibuster at dvdbird.com is our email. Mac, take us away.
I grok Spock.